So hello, Andy Cowdery, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So you're in the, I've got to say, the pleasure dome, because the pleasuring shed.
That's the one.
That's your shed.
Yeah, it's just my shed. Yeah, it's just where I come to pleasure myself. So yeah.
Play me a tackle.
Play with indeed, yeah.
Brilliant.
I do love a pun, and yeah. The ruder the better.
Brilliant, so. Brilliant stuff. So just to explain who Andy is. Andy makes the most beautiful handmade floats. I mean, I don't know if you can see that. This is a few of them here, and we'll be talking about these a little bit later on. Absolutely stunning things. I'm so keen to get out fishing with these. I've been a bit ill, so I haven't been out to try these, but I'm so keen to do so. So we're going to have a little chat about how he makes his floats, and he's also got a YouTube channel with tutorials on there as well. So we'll cover a bit of that as well, if that's all right. But I always like to know, Andy, where your fishing started. So how old were you? Where were you fishing? What kind of things were you doing?
I think the first time I went fishing was probably with a mate from school, called Mark, funnily enough.
Common name. Yes.
I don't even know how it came about. So I knew he went fishing and we got talking and he said, come along. And we went along and it was just our local river. I live in West London, so it was just a small little stream of a river. And we caught gudgeon and I can't even remember if we caught a roach, maybe some minnows. And yeah, that was it really. It was a real simple start. And then got my own rod and reel. And I think my mum and dad bought me a 7-foot bright red Woolworth special.
Yeah, love them.
With everything that you needed, you know, massive, great big hooks.
£10 line.
£10 line that would just, yeah, as soon as you put a bend in it, that was it, the line was knackered. But yeah, it was great fun. And from that, I was hooked.
Yeah. And have you fished from that point onwards, pretty much? Have you had other interests?
I fished up until probably my late teens, and then better things came along, booze, girls.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
and so I stopped. The last time I went fishing was in Brentford Lock. I used to go down, I lived near there at the time, and I used to go down there and fish under the bridge, under the road bridge, and you'd catch roach and rudd and obviously perch and things like that. And I was sat in there one day and I was catching nothing. I'd been there about 2 hours and I'd not had a bite. And this chap came along walking his dog, as they do. And you had anything, mate? I said, no, I've had nothing. You know. And he said, I'm not surprised. They dumped a load of poison in here last week. No. Killed everything.
Oh, God.
So that's it. I kind of packed up, went home, and the rods went up into the loft. And I never came out again until probably about 6 or 7 years ago, when my son said, we were up in my loft and he found my old fishing gear and he said, can we go? And I was like, okay. So we did. And we went down to the canal, Grand Union Canal in Watford.
Yeah.
And we had a fish in there. They caught their first perch. And
fantastic.
Yeah. And that it definitely rekindled a passion that was always there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely rekindled. So,
oh, brilliant.
And it's just grown big time since then.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So do you still fish the canal, or where do you fish now? Do you fish in different... Do you fish on the Thames? Is that near you, or is that...
Yeah, when I was in my teens, I fished Twickenham. I used to fish by Ilpite Island and along there. I fished the River Colne. But nothing of any consequence. I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I didn't really know. My dad fished a little bit. He took me to Virginia Waters you could buy a season ticket for Virginia Waters.
Yeah.
Put my first ever bream there, you know, that sort of thing. But no, I'm lucky now to be a member of a club. So we've got a couple of lakes open to us and a couple of stretches of river. But mainly day ticket waters. I just fish day ticket waters. So around here, we've got places like Watmore Farm, Finch Farm, Marsh Farm, lots of farms.
Lots of farms, yeah. Marsh Farm, is that where the big crucians are?
So that's a really lovely place. And last year, July, I got a membership with that one as well. So that's the Godalming Angling Society. So
Wow.
But I've yet to kind of get out and try those lakes yet. So that's my project for this year when it stops blooming raining.
Oh, it's been a nightmare, hasn't it? It's been, well, we're already kind of, well, was it day? Is it a couple of days, end of the river season, and it's been a complete washout up here. I don't think the same down where you are, isn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, Marsh Farm, that's on my list to do, Marsh Farm. The Crucians down there, we have a few places up here. We've got some decent Crucians, sort of 2 and 3 pounders, which is...
together, there you go.
Hey, I'll come with my float. You see, I think this is the float. I think I can imagine that dotted down perfectly for Crucians.
Great for lift bites, that one.
Yeah, superb. Well, we will talk a bit more about your floats in a little while. But so, on you're still fishing. I know you. What you do on your YouTube videos, I can see, is obviously do your tutorials, and then you go fishing with the. You know, with your floats. So, and I notice you fish with you've got a cane rod and a centre pin.
Yeah, sometimes, not always. I've got some. I'm a bit of a hoarder.
Yeah.
And if I see a bargain somewhere, I'll just kind of buy it, and whether I restore it or it's usable as it is, I'll just use it. So I've got a few old centre pins. You can't really see them, but they're all hanging up here.
Brilliant.
Above my head. So loads of old rods, some rods that I had when I was a kid. I've got an old Shakespeare rod that, you know, I used as a kid. So I've got a couple of split canes, a couple of old glass. My favorite rod is a 12-foot fiberglass cane rod, probably from the late 60s, maybe early 70s.
Wow.
There's a signature on it, but I can't read the signature. I think it's Chris something. It's probably just a handmade rod, you know, that someone's just bought the blank.
Yeah.
It's got a lovely long cork handle on it, and I absolutely adore it. And it's caught me some nice fish as well.
Yeah.
For an old rod, it's a really nice fish. So I'm not into modern techniques and modern tackle. And, you know, my son, that's my son's department. He wants all the carpy warpy.
Yeah.
all the bibbies and the bed chairs and the.
Yeah, a lot of kit, isn't there? A lot of kit.
Ridiculous and so expensive.
It is ridiculous. I have my phases. I used to do quite a lot of barbel fishing, and I wondered where I got absolutely shattered. I'd come back and I decided to weigh my gear, and it was 5.5 stone I was carrying, you know, like half a mile down the back. I thought, what am I doing this for? And I cut it all down, but it's sort of increasing again, you know. It's I'm gonna have to chuck a few things out. We take a lot of unnecessary stuff, and kite fishing, yeah, it's another level.
Oh, completely. But yeah, no, I love the simpler the better. Honestly, the simpler type of fishing is for me personally, is the best way.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
Everybody likes that. People want the lightest rods and the most sensitive gear, and I just want to fish.
Yeah.
I don't care what I catch, you know, I'm happy to catch a perch that's this big, and I'm happy to catch a carp that's that big.
Perfect.
And I really and everything in between.
Yeah, that's good, because you can put a lot of pressure on yourself sometimes. You've got some people, anglers, kind of chasing PBs and, you know, this, that, and bigger nets of fish. And I've fallen into that trap, and you just think, what are you doing? Just enjoy fishing. Just go and sit in the countryside and chill out.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, when I go with my son, and I go with my dad as well, I'm lucky enough to still be able to fish
brilliant.
With my dad. Summer's evening, sitting down side by side, you know, on one swim together, and just he has one rod going one way and I have one rod going the other way. You end up catching more than me, but I always get the biggest. So,
fantastic. Yeah, that's it. That's what life's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, it's lovely. And, you know, we just sit and chat, and he tells me about what he did when he was a kid and all the stuff he got up to. And, you know, I don't tell him what I did when I was
a kid. X-rated. In your pleasure in shed.
But it's just nice. And that's, for me, that's fishing. It's being outdoors, in nature, hearing the birds singing, catching a few fish. If I blank, I really don't care.
Yeah.
I know I've had a day outdoors, you know.
That's good.
And I'm finding as well that my sessions are getting shorter.
Yeah.
Whereas I go for I'd be up at the crack of what's it, and I'd fish until it got dark, you know. So I'd be out 12, 14 hours during the summer.
Yeah.
You know, and now a 5-6-7 hour session is more than enough.
It's funny.
Getting to the lake in the afternoon and fishing till, you know, 7-8 in the evening, you know, and that's a really lovely time for me.
Yeah.
So I do love the summer.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny that, I mean, I can remember, you know, the number of times you think, my God, I've just fished 16 hours. That's like 2 working days. And it flies by, doesn't it? You're just like, you know,
yeah, that's the thing I found with fishing for a whole day. You'd get there and you'd be set up by, you know, 6, 7 in the morning. And you catch a couple of fish, you look at your watch and it's 10:30.
Weird.
You think, what?
Yeah.
It's strange.
It's a very strange thing without fishing. It's just going to this zone and, yeah, you're like, pop out the other end. You think, where's all that time gone? If you were at work, beavering away, it'd be like, oh, another hour gone by. Oh, I've got another 3 hours before 5 o'clock. But fishing, it's different, isn't it? So, brilliant. So, your float making then. Tell us about how you started making your own beautiful floats. What was the story behind that?
So, lockdown.
Okay.
That was the start of it. We were all told to stay at home, and so fishing was even out. You couldn't, in the first big lockdown, we couldn't go fishing. No. All the lakes were shut. And I'm a tinkerer. I love tinkering. Okay. I love taking things apart, seeing how they tick, and sometimes not being able to put them back together. But I was looking at a float looking through my float box and thinking, oh, that some of my floats are getting quite old, and how hard would it be to make a float? Mm. So I started playing around, and I think the first float I ever made or tried to make was out of a paintbrush.
A paintbrush? Small
handled paintbrush.
Yep.
The thing is, it was thinner at the top and fatter. So the bit that you hold as a paintbrush is a bit fatter, and then it's thinner at the top. And I thought, if I paint that red and put an eye at the bottom, but it failed miserably. It just
did it.
I think it took like 1 number 6 to cock it.
Did it? Wow. Wow.
It was a real disaster.
Because the density of the wood, was it?
Because I didn't know anything about materials or anything like that. So, and then I thought, balsa wood. And I had a bit of old balsa wood, so I started shaping it and got a sort of a balsa wood shape on it. Yeah. And yeah, again, more disasters. So the first, I've actually got it here. This is the first that I kind of was quite pleased with, but when you see it, you'll laugh.
That's great. That's fantastic. That's brilliant. And is that a balsa body? A balsa body and cane, is it?
It's a balsa body with a bit of bamboo skewer through the middle of it.
Fantastic.
But it's so poorly shaped. I look at it now and I think, my God, it's like a 5-year-old made it.
That's wonderful.
It caught a fish.
Did it? What was your first fish on it then?
A carp. Yeah, really? from one of my day ticket waters. I just picked up a little, I think it was about a 4-pound mirror carp, something like that. It was an achievement, and I felt really sort of pleased with myself for doing it.
Yeah.
And then I discovered YouTube.
Okay.
And all the tutorials on YouTube, all the people making floats. I taught myself how to do the whipping and discovered all new materials. So Sarcanda reed was a revelation. I mean, my goodness me, what you can do with Sarcanda reed.
Yeah. Why is that? What's so special about it then?
I don't know. No. I mean, I'd heard of Norfolk reed, and I'd kind of gone on eBay and I'd found some Norfolk reed and I bought some and kind of got how it worked. I started making floats out of bamboo cane as well, like your garden canes for putting up your runner beans, which was my first video.
I saw that. That's interesting. Out of your own garden, and you created a float. That's fantastic.
I'm in the garden, so that was quite good. So just cut off a dead branch of that or a dead cane and cut it down into sections. But the thing I found with the cane was it's really unpredictable for the shotting weight. So you could get a really thick piece of cane that would take 3 number 4s to cock it.
Right.
Or you get a really thick piece of cane that would take 4 BBs. Consistency in the materials for getting the weights right. But with the Sarcanda reed, you can pretty much say, well, a Sarcanda reed at 4.5 mil thick that's 10 centimeters long is going to take 3 BB to cock it.
Right.
And that's consistent throughout all of it. So it made making batches of floats much, much easier.
Yeah.
Quite a versatile material. So yeah, I was really quite pleased with that.
Fantastic. And what about other materials? What other materials are you? Obviously, I've got here. We've got peacock quill. We've got, I think, crow quill. Is it or goose quill? I think
Goose quill's there. Yeah, that's a goose quill. And I've got porcupine quills.
Porcupine.
Quill. Yeah.
Beautiful.
So they're my favourite of all time. I love, love, love a porcupine quill. I've got, I don't know if I'll show you here, I've got pots and pots of them. Stuff that I just buy off eBay, just when somebody's selling off old floats or I'm rummaging around. I go to a lot of antique shops and things like that, you know, sort of bric-a-brac shops.
Right,
and
yeah.
quite often, old float box in the back. Or so, you know, I'll buy a, however many goose quills I can find. And I'd prefer to restore an old quill than buy new quills, because I'm not entirely sure how ethically sourced porcupine quills are. So I don't like, I have bought them. I'm not going to say I don't, but I have bought them. But I would much rather restore an old quill and bring it back to life and give it a new life than you know, bringing out, making one out of an old, a brand new quill.
Yeah, yeah, that's fascinating stuff. And so things like peacock quill, do you make plots out of that as well? And I'm trying to think of the others.
Funnily enough, peacock quills are, I've just bought some quills. These are long peacock quills. They're about 30 centimeters long.
Yeah.
So I'll probably get two floats out of one stem. Yep. But this is a relatively new material for me. I've not worked with peacock before. Goose quills I use. Yep. So I've got some goose feathers up here. You see those?
All right, fantastic.
They'll be stripped down, and you've got some goose quills that I gave you.
So. Yep, yep, beautiful.
But yeah, balsa, succander reed, goose quill, pineapple. Oh, goodness,
pineapple. Once you get it in your head, you can't forget it.
I know. Yeah, porcupine quill. What else? I think that's about it, really.
Superb.
Yeah, I'm just looking at loads of floats hanging up here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. So in terms of then you've evolved, you've learnt, you then started selling them, and you created this brand Black Bottom Floats. And I'm getting it, that's is that come from the whipping at the bottom of the float, or is that just, how did that come about?
It's a little bit of a mixture of things. I honestly don't know where it came from.
Okay.
I use the eyelet that I use at the bottom are safety pins with the head cut off. And I found that I prefer the black ones as opposed to the brass or silver ones. I prefer the black ones. And I think one day I said, oh, well, all my floats have a black bottom.
Right.
And hence the name Black Bottom Floats. And it kind of stuck. And I thought, well, it kind of trips off the tongue as well. It's quite a bottom floats. It's an easy thing to say.
Yeah.
It just evolved. And I've got to thank my friend Ali. She designed my logo for me. And
very professional, I've seen it on your cuppa. I've seen it on your YouTube videos, on your logo. Yeah. And
it's full of tea. So
cheers, I've got water just out of reach. Yeah. That's brilliant. So how long have you been selling them then? How long have the, and I should say that, well, I should ask you really, I think I know the answer already, but where can people buy you your floats?
I've been for just a couple of years, say since lockdown. I've kind of honed my craft, as you say, and please, I don't claim to be a master craftsman. There are float makers out there that are far, far superior.
Well, they're pretty special, I must say. I've got to say.
Thank you very much for saying so. But my aim, I'll come back to your question. My aim is to give people nice floats at quite a reasonable price.
Hmm.
That's the thing. So eBay is where I sell my floats. That's
eBay.
I mean, people can message me via Instagram if they want to make, if they got a specific float in mind that they want made, a particular weight or design or a color of the whipping or something like that. But like I say, I will do my best, but I am no master craftsman. I'm not an expert.
That's great. No, it's I mean, what I will do is I'll put links, obviously, to your eBay shop. I think I put in the description of this. So what is it? Is it andy.bb? Black Bottom BBF? Is it?
Yeah, yeah. Or if you just type in Black Bottom Floats into your eBay search, it will probably come up.
Brilliant. So, I will put a link.
Make sure you put the floats bit at the end, otherwise you get a very
black bottom something or other. fantastic, that's great. And any future plans for Black Bottom Floats? Any evolution? Are you just carrying on?
I mean, the dream would be to give up work and do it full time. That would be the dream, but you know, it's a hobby that allows me to engage with other people. Like, I've met you through this, so this is great. I'd say the YouTube is a bit of fun. I've got an amazing friend, Ali, who helps me with all my filming, and she does the editing as well. Oh. So I'm just the pretty face in front of the camera.
Fantastic. That's handy. That's why I need an editor. Yeah, that'd be good.
Hard work. I just do the fun stuff.
Well, yeah, it is a bit of a pain in the backside editing, I must admit. So, go on.
I was just saying, I'm not very technically minded. So, I'm more of a hands-on maker than a computer-based.
Yeah, it's not for everybody, is it? It's not for everybody. So, if people obviously were interested in making their own vlogs, obviously I'd recommend that they buy yours and miss out that. But you know, as part of, if they wanted to do it, wanted to have a go themselves. I mean, obviously, you've got all these tutorials, and again, I'll put a link on your YouTube channel on that. But to get people started, what sort of kit would they need to start, and what materials and things? What advice would you give? Anybody want to
start off simple? You don't need to spend loads and loads of money. You've probably got some thread and a safety pin at home, so you don't need to, you know, nothing particular. Bamboo cane is a good one to start with because it's quite an easy material to work with. You'll need some very basic tools, a little saw, a scalpel blade or a razor blade for cutting the thread. The sharper the blade, the better, but please be careful what you use. I mean, you can go online, you can buy all the materials that you want, the Sukanda reed and things like that. You can get all of that online, get it on eBay. There's various websites and places you can go. Start simple. Don't try and copy. You know, don't try and copy all of these extravagant floats with feather inlays and all the rest of it. Just keep it simple. All it has to have is a red or a yellow top or a whatever color top you want. A bit of enamel paint like you used to paint your, your model aircraft with, that sort of model. Just have a go. And that's all I did. I just had a go.
Yeah.
And watched a few videos, learned a few different techniques like the whipping and stuff like that. And if you watch the videos I've done, I've really tried to focus on that whipping and do it step by step, so you get a good idea and understanding of it.
Yeah, it's
lots of people. Why are you showing people how to make your floats? Surely that's the worst business idea you could have.
Well, I think people still want they want to have a go, don't they? Some people and other people, like I wouldn't even dream to attempt anything like this. I'm like, whoa, no chance. It'd be a disaster if I had a go. So
no, I don't. Honestly, don't think it would. It's not as I'm sort of doing myself out of this, but it's not as difficult as it looks.
Okay.
It just takes time and practice. And I sit here and I make hundreds of floats now, you know, or I've made hundreds of floats. Yeah. So what is it they say? Is it 10,000 hours?
10,000 hours. Blimey, yeah.
Something like that. There's an old saying, isn't there, or a quote from somewhere? Yeah. You've got to be doing something for 10,000 hours before
you become an expert.
An expert or something, and I'm nowhere near that yet. You know, I'm probably, you know, into the hundreds of hours rather than the thousands of hours. Repetition, and you learn from your mistakes. I mean, I've got boxes of floats. I mean, you just see them over my right shoulder, just up there.
Okay, yeah,
the whole box of my cast offs, my floats that aren't quite good enough to sell, if you know what I mean. They're good enough to use, but you know, there might be a slight blemish in the varnish something's not quite right with them. So there's a whole pot up there, and I usually give them away to anyone that comes and visits to the shed. And it's like the pot, take that kind of thing.
Fantastic. Well, that's absolutely wonderful. It's absolutely fascinating. I'm so keen and excited to get out with these. And I'm going to have this one. That's going to be perfect for me grailing. And I've got, you know, sort of set back a little bit, but they will definitely get used, and they will be certainly featuring in my YouTube videos. So, you know, thanks so much for these. And it's been absolutely great catching up and talking to you and hearing about it all. So,
thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. And we'll keep in touch, obviously. And as I say, I'll look out for the videos on YouTube. I'll be definitely using them. And thanks for your time, Andy. And I will, as I say, put links in the description of this little video. And you can find Andy's shop on eBay and also his fantastic tutorials on YouTube as well. So,
it's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much. And tight lines and happy float making.
And the same to you.
Thanks, mate. Thanks very much. Bye-bye. Bye.